the OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
All right, you're welcome along. It's Thursday's Off the Ball. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock this evening. We've got a busy few hours ahead. We'll keep an eye on the live action, which is Europa League quarterfinal second leg. Arsenal and Manchester United both playing tonight. They get underway at 8 o'clock. We'll be reflecting on the Champions League quarterfinals. John Giles coming away from 7:30. We then talk to Miguel Delaney on the football show. Also on the football show, Kenny Shields, the former Derry City manager. He guided the Northern Ireland women's team to the European Championship finals this week. They will be the lowest ranked team at next summer's finals. I say next summer, that's the summer of 2022. So he'll join us on the football show. And between 8 and 9, we are going to discuss sports stars' relationship with social media. It is not a particularly good one for many reasons. We will obviously talk about the toxic side of it and also the side of it where sports people don't actually control their own social media sites. We saw this last night. Phil Foden sent a little tweet, nothing too harmful in it, I didn't think, to Kylian Mbappe straight after the final whistle after he scored that winning goal for Manchester City. It was said, "Are you ready?" with a handshake emoji and a picture of Foden scoring the goal. But Phil didn't find it that funny. It turned out he hadn't sent it at all. His social media team had sent it. It was promptly deleted. Just one of many social media issues the footballers are facing. So we'll discuss that after 8 o'clock as well. Joe Malloy is with us.
Does anyone have a good relationship with social media, Nathan?
It's a good question. Richie?
No. No. It's a weird thing. Like I saw there was Tina Fey was talking about this. I think it was on that My Next Guest Is series with David Letterman, where she was talking about not being on Twitter, not being on social media. And she says, if you just imagine to point out Twitter's pointlessness, for instance, and us three can't, you know, really give out because we're all there. But if you point out Twitter's main flaw, it's that if you imagine every single tweet is preceded by the words, "Hey, do you know what I think about this?" And then you go into your regular tweet, it kind of loses its luster a little bit. Nobody really cares ultimately what another person thinks. Opinions, as the great Tony Wilson once said, you're entitled to your opinion, but your opinion is shit, essentially. So yeah,
it'd be a close run thing, I'd say, between myself and Richie to see which of us is the more addicted. Joe, you're on the lower end of the scale. You have a bit of willpower. Sometimes you might step off, I think. But what frustrates me about Twitter is I could spend a good 20 minutes scrolling through it. And if you were to ask me right at the end of that 20 minutes, tell me one thing you have read. Tell me one tweet that you remember for that 20 minutes. And I could not remember one, ever.
I hate to burst your bubble. I'm as addicted as anyone, unfortunately. It is so insidious. I can't just seem to kick the habit, Nathan. I'll try. I'll do different things. So I'll delete it off my phone, but then you can still get in through your web browser, or even there's ways where even Apple make it very difficult to get it off your phone totally. So once I realized if I just searched Twitter, it'd bring the app up. My brain knew that, and my brain just kept outsmarting me and doing that against my will. And then I put a time limit on. You can set a time limit for the day, you know? So 15 minutes per day is what you can use. Naturally enough, when you get to the end of your 15 minutes, it gives you the option for, hey, another 15 minutes?
Like a good dealer, yeah.
Don't mind if I do. And there are certain parts of the day, Nathan, where the other option is remove time limit for the day. And, you know, if it's kind of 5-6 o'clock, I'm thinking, well, you know, really, maybe remove for the day. So that's dreadful. It's so addictive. I mean, it's just designed by very, very smart people who know behavioral science inside out and know our tendencies inside out, and they have created the perfect beast. I don't genuinely know anyone who has a good, if they're being honest, has a good relationship with it in terms of the amount of time they spend on it.
Gary Neville was tweeting earlier, this follows Phil Foden's little incident. So Phil Foden clearly doesn't run his own Twitter account, and like an awful lot of footballers, has a company that does it for him and puts up pretty inoffensive stuff and satisfies the sponsors, no doubt, as well. And he said, I mentioned on here a few weeks ago about players having their accounts run by social media companies. Lads, run your own accounts. Your independent thought and authenticity is at stake. It's your voice, not anyone else's. Good morning, by the way. Go and attack the hell out of it. And a little love heart from Gary Neville, lad, just to finish that. I can understand why players just push it over here, because if Phil Foden runs that, and Phil Foden has been guilty of a minor indiscretion, say, for example, when he was on England duty previously, but say he's on a night out and he gets home at 1 a.m, and just tweets something even remotely silly. Pep Guardiola has been asked about that in the press conference the next day. He's probably going to have to apologise. He may well end up losing his place in the team, and it's going to cost him a lot of money. Keep it safe and keep it simple, Richie.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And especially with footballers and the world, like, they would fall into, whether they would admit it or not, into the world of the influencer. And the influencer, much like the people who created social media, have very smartly worked out that there's money to be made from this thing. And like you mentioned there, if Phil Foden just does a couple of innocuous tweets, says how great his boots are, says how much he's enjoying such and such an energy drink, and how great it is to be on such an airline going on holidays at the end of the season, then he's going to make himself a tidy packet for it. Why bother getting bogged down with the bored between now and lunch, nothing to do, and then like literally having everybody pile on top of you? He's never going to read a notification in his life, and his life is all the better for it.
The problem is you have the Joe Hart type incident when Spurs are knocked out of the Europa League, and the social media person who's probably sitting at home half watching realizes, I've got to send that Joe Hart tweet at 9:45 at night. What was the score? 3-0. Oh, Tottenham won 3-0. Delighted with our 3-0 win. On we go. Having just been beaten by 3-0. Of course, it could be worse. You could be the guy who was working for Dulux today. Did you see this, Joe?
Yeah.
So good.
So Dulux, everybody, are getting an awful lot of publicity. Maybe they're perfectly happy with this, actually. Either that, or it was an Arsenal supporter running the account and it was their last day and it all just went horribly wrong. But anyways, Tottenham today announced that Dulux UK, the nation's number one paint brand, as our first ever official paint supplier. Wonderful, the things that football clubs can do and will do to get money in. So the first reply was, because they put up the picture of the beautiful dog. What sort of dog is the Dulux dog, Richie?
Oh, is it some kind of... I don't know.
It's a beautiful looking dog, anyways. It's, everyone knows what the Dulux dog looks like. Can the dog play centre back? Said Chris at Chris H Football. To which Dulux responded, he might do a better job, Chris. The next one was, time to paint that trophy cabinet. To which Dulux responded with a picture of a trophy cabinet saying, for sale, unused trophy cabinet. Paint that dusty trophy cabinet, said an Irish tweeter, Glake Orm Aina. To which Dulux responded, don't be silly. Surfaces should be dust-free before painting. Dulux have obviously had to issue an apology about this.
A groveling apology. Or
something. Yeah. Well... yeah, it was a grovelling apology, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Everybody handled it quite well, though, to the point where you don't really feel back in reporting on it, because it's just essentially giving the sponsor more gloss, as it were.
It's hard to know if they've outsmarted us all, all right, you know? But we're deeply sorry.
I think they have.
Deeply, deeply. Jose was asked about it in his press conference earlier as well, and didn't know what they were talking about. And what followed was 3 minutes of incredible awkwardness that ended with the journalist apologising basically for asking the question, and please just move on, please just move on. Don't ask me anything else about it. I don't understand why any millionaire would need to have a Twitter account. They don't need to do commercial revenue. Do they need the commercial revenue to begin with? Asked Keith. It's easy money for them.
It's a lot of money.
They don't need it, but they want it. Yeah. Handy absolutely money as well.
Stephen Doyle tells literally me it's just an old English sheepdog. Money. An old English sheepdog.
There we go.
There you go. I saw Peter Crouch responded to Gary Neville's tweet about Phil Foden saying something like, you know, really disappointed with the results today. Fans were terrific. Onwards and upwards, you know, which I presume is the go-to when standard, you've lost. Yeah. And we see that all the time. I mean, it's inoffensive and it's nonsense. And maybe if you're 14, you think it's amazing to see something tweeted, quote unquote, directly from Phil Foden. I think, you see, Neville is very, very interesting in that he's an intelligent fella and fairly clued in and, you know, he would really enjoy having that platform. I think there's an awful lot of footballers out there who would be fearful of that platform and see it as just pothole after pothole and approach with caution at all times and don't say the wrong thing about the wrong thing and stay in my lane. And actually, the more I think about it, I'm getting stressed out. Someone else look after it. And yeah, well, I think that's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, the thing about Neville as well is that he's from a, I hate to say a generation, but he is from a Twitter generation of sorts that would have just been... The idea of having a social media team look after your account if you're a footballer would have been just unheard of. So he has, you know, built up his brand online, which is essentially what it is and has been for the last decade or however he's been long he's Twitter. If he was to suddenly hand that over, to a social media team who started tweeting out this banal nonsense instead of the opinion that everybody follows Gary Neville in the first place for, then he's going to suffer for it and going to, I guess in his own opinion anyway, look the worse for it. So he has to keep up what he has been doing for the past decade, whereas someone like Phil Foden, still a teenager, can just hand off this account to whatever management team is looking after him and get them to look after it, and Phil Foden's world's a better place.
Well, what Gary Neville really needs to inform us is who is running Roy Keane's Instagram account.
Not right. Roy Keane.
It's a close family member, though, I suspect.
Do you not think it's Roy Keane?
No. Not no, a chance.
I do. I think that humour is Roy
I think he's getting a bit
over.
Of advice. Roy, pull out the old Ireland jersey. You think he's sitting at home bored of a Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock going, where's that old Ireland jersey? I'll stick that on. I'll stick it up on Instagram. Million likes. Great stuff. Nice boost to the ego.
I mean, he might be. he might be.
I really hope he is. I hope he's that sad and pathetic. I hope he's like the rest of us going, what's a cheap hit here for me? 53106 is the text number if you want to get in touch. Or you can tweet us, of course, at Off The Ball. The only social media I use, Joe, is the Golf Weekly Discord group, which is just a beautiful place. Positivity.
That's just clunky as hell. You're going to have to do better.
By the way, you can get access to that, $3.99 a month. Get onto odbsports.com/golfweekly. But they're just beautiful people there, full of positivity. They were very excited earlier. Our boy Troy, our friend of the pod, Troy Merritt, was topping the leaderboard at the Heritage at Hilton Head, and then he went in the water. And a lot of people have backed him at about 250-1. So there were a few tears, but there's a long way to go. Anyways, you can get all that good stuff. You know where at this stage. The news are Off The Ball and New Stokes with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Richie, team news ahead of the Six Nations game at the weekend.
Speaking of playing the game, Nathan, Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe could make her Ireland debut on Saturday. The Sevens International named among the replacements for the Women's Six Nations in association with Guinness clash with France. Meanwhile, Emma Hooban is also drafted onto that replacement's bench. But Adam Griggs has stuck with the same 15 that started last week's 45-0 win away to Wales. Bevan Parsons continues on the wing, and after a pair of tries against Wales and the attention that's come with it, Griggs says she's adapting to all that attention.
Yeah, she is getting a lot of attention, but I think you've probably heard she's quite mature for her age, and obviously I've been with Bevan since she burst onto the scene. I was involved with her in the under-18 sevens setup as well, so we've known each other a while now and worked together, and I think she's handling it quite well. I guess the side of it that we need to be prepared for is, you know, with that attention and how well she's done, is that she's going to come across a lot stronger defence this weekend. They're probably... If I was coaching on the opposite side, I'd be putting two defenders on her to make sure that she's marked up well. And so we've got to make sure that we can bring her into the game in other ways and not just, I suppose, some of the highlight reel stuff that we saw last week. It's going to take more of an effort to grind them down. And she's capable of that. And that's probably where she's still learning a little bit and just understanding her role and how she can be a threat in other areas of the field rather than just waiting on a wing for the ball.
Yeah, it's a really good analysis of that from Fiona Coughlin and Brian O'Driscoll on our Six Nations show with Valerie Wheeler, which is up on all our social channels in association with Guinness. And some really strong words as well from Brian about what next for Irish rugby, for women's rugby and for women's sport in this country. So you can watch that back around about now. Europa League, Richie, what are we, 8 o'clock kickoff?
8 o'clock kickoffs across the board. Arsenal needing to score away from home tonight and probably twice if they're to reach the semi-final of the Europa League. Their quarter-final with Slavia Prague level at a goal apiece after last week's first leg at the Emirates. Brent Leno starts in goal for Arsenal, then a back three of Callum Chambers, Rob Holding and Pablo Mari. In midfield for them, they've got Granit Xhaka, Thomas Partey and Danny Ceballos, with Emile Smith-Rowe and Bukayo Saka in support of Nicolas Pepe and Alexandre Lacazette. And Manchester United should have things far more comfortable tonight. They're back at Old Trafford carrying a 2-0 first leg advantage from their tie with the Spanish side, Granada. United tonight lining up with David De Gea in goal, the back four of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Axel Tuanzebe, Victor Lindelof and Alex Telles. In midfield, it's Nemanja Matic, Paul Pogba, who's captain for the night, and Fred with Bruno Fernandes in support of Mason Greenwood and Edinson Cavani. Elsewhere, Ajax need to overturn a 2-1 first leg deficit. They're away to Roma, and Villarreal hold a 1-0 advantage out of their home tie with Dinamo Zagreb. And as I say, all of those games kicking off at 8.
Gary Neville has the time in his hands and the confidence to engage with social media. What professional footballer is going to allow themselves to be distracted by having to post your inner thoughts? If I was a manager and my players were expending energy on that, I'd be unimpressed.
Yeah, says Matt. Neville really is a special case. I mean, in his own playing days, he used to get up at 6 or 7 a.m. I mean, he seems to be a workaholic. He would get up at 6 or 7 a.m. and go through all the newspapers or go onto the websites, I suppose, increasingly as time went on, and check the sports pages. And he'd be ringing the press officer at Manchester United saying things like, the Telegraph has said this about us. It's not right. You need to get back onto them. You know, he's a different beast entirely. You know, I don't think Phil Foden is quite in that same headspace.
Yeah, and the actual post that they're putting up is the least of their problems, which we're also going to discuss after 8, because it's the responses you then get to the post that they need to somehow try and avoid. So if they are going, I wouldn't be overly concerned about my footballer tweeting. I'd be more concerned about what they're getting back in response and how that's affecting their mood for the rest of the day. So you can understand if clubs don't particularly want them there. And in fact, if they just hand it over and say, I'm never going to look at this, but represent me well.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, you can have certain settings. I think I was on Twitter the other day. I saw Kelly Cates at a setting whereby you can't reply unless she follows you. And maybe that goes against the grain of being available to the fans. So maybe they don't want to go down that route, but it's an option.
You're thinking about it, Joe, aren't you?
I mute a lot of people.
I never muted anyone for years. I'm one of these people who, when I was on Twitter and I was getting annoyed, I almost felt like I was enjoying the annoyance. It was part of the experience. Whereas in the last 6 months, I'm like, no, you're an idiot. You're gone.
Mute block. It's crack.
Shane in Booterstown says, I've used content restriction options on iPhone for Facebook and Twitter, also added the website blocker on desktop. Best decision ever and great to help keep away from all the negativity, says Shane in Booterstown. See, anytime I delete the app, I'm not on Facebook anymore, but anytime I delete the Twitter app, I sort of come around to the, I need it for work.
Which is true to a point, you know, like it is such a brilliant tool for work, but there's no doubt we abuse it completely, and it's you know, 10% of the work value comes in. I think it's always striking whenever you watch any of these documentaries. There's a brilliant one on Netflix, one on Netflix, really top, where they get to all the people who worked in all the companies and designed a lot of the products. Like you have the bloke on YouTube who designed the automatic play,
the social dilemma
function, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, in all cases, when they're asked, why, you know, do your kids use it? They look at the interviewer as if he or she has three heads. Of course my kids aren't anywhere near this stuff.
Yeah, that was without... And having watched that night, straight away you're going, right, something's going to change. And then I also went online to see what other people were saying about this.
Yeah, it's too clever. It's linked to all our instincts, everything from, you know, our social status. All of this stuff is wrapped up in it. So they did a bloody good job.
They certainly did. And well, listen, they've been really rewarded for it as well, which is pleasing for everyone. Some Leinster news, Richie?
Yeah, another retirement. Scott Fardy today announcing he's retiring at the end of the season. The Australian forward turns 37 in July. He joined Leinster from the Brumbies back in 2017. And in those intervening 4 years, he's won a Heineken Champions Cup and 4 Guinness Pro 14 titles. Meanwhile, Leinster today confirming that hooker Sean Cronin and scrum half Luke McGrath have both signed new deals with the province. And with Leinster hopeful of welcoming back some fans during the Rainbow Cup, Fardy would like to bid his adopted supporters farewell in person.
Yeah, that'd be great. You know, I think it's been a really tough year not having supporters in the grounds, even away supporters. You know, I'd love to cop a bit of abuse from away supporter as well. So, we're looking forward to hopefully having someone there and, saying goodbye and saying thank you for all the support they've given me over my time here and other guys in the team and the support they get week in, week out.
Every day this week, we're giving away 4 tickets for the fantastic upcoming Leaders Lounge live event. That's a ticket for you and 3 friends, along with a hamper of goodies to enjoy during the event. It's all happening on April 22nd. It has a world-class panel of leaders, including Razzie Erasmus, Brian O'Driscoll, Chanel McCoy, Joanna Reardon, and Paul McGinley. To be with the chance of winning, answer this question. Razzie Erasmus was director of rugby for which Irish province from 2016 to 2017? Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents and we'll contact you after the show. It's all with thanks to Leaders Lounge. Check out leadersloungelive.com. A bit more rugby news. So it seems as though the Rainbow Cup is going to go ahead. Even listening to Scott Fardy there, maybe to get the supporters back, it'd be incredible if they did over the next couple of months. But some law trials going to take place?
Yeah, they're doing a bit of fiddling with the rule book. 3 new law variations are going to be trialled in the upcoming Rainbow Cup. Teams losing a player to a red card will be able to use a nominated substitute to replace the offender after a 20-minute period. Captains will be allowed 1 challenge per match to review referees' decisions, and a change to the dropout rule has also been made, and the competition itself starts next week.
Interesting. That is interesting. Because I remember chatting to Matt Williams in version just off air, you know, we're kind of chatting during the game sometimes because all these red cards are happening now, and they do, you don't want to say they ruin a game, but obviously they go a long way towards it. And he mentioned some system in league which I hadn't looked into. Maybe it's similar to this, that after a red card you can bring someone on after a certain period of time.
Yeah,
it's a tricky one. So I presume it's a recognition on Union's part that they're trying to clean up the game and stop the high hits, and therefore we're going to have a lot more red cards. Like, look how many we had in the Six Nations. And so it's a way of balancing that out. Be interesting to see how that goes down with people, because obviously it does make it maybe a little, it does not incentivize the odd high hit here and there, but it certainly makes it less punishing. Like, I think we were pretty quickly heading to a point where the high hits would disappear because it was so punitive. You almost kind of think, well, maybe Union should just hold its nerve on this a little longer, and player behavior will then have to change radically and quickly, whereas maybe this softens it in a way you don't want to soften it.
The one challenge per match to review a referee's decision. Is that taking away from the TMO, or is it even if you disagree with the referee and the TMO, you can get them to go back again?
Well, where do you go? Like, do we call Joe Schmidt and say, what do you think? I mean,
find a judge to your liking eventually. This guy, this guy.
Get me a higher def screen, please.
I'll be interested to see how this tournament goes. Obviously, it's coming at a strange time in the season, but there's big provincial derbies to start it all off. Are we going to see the frontline players playing in this, or is it going to be a very similar to the Pro 14, where by and large it's the second string?
Probably the latter, I think, isn't it? With European, certainly for whatever about Munster, certainly for Leinster, although their second string can handle it, so maybe it'll be okay.
Richie, what is the latest from the golf?
Yeah, Shane Lowry's just picked up a birdie on his seventh hole. He started on the back nine this evening, so that seventh hole coming at the 16th. It's his third birdie in all so far today. That one bogey at the 12th, the blot in his copybook. So he's 2 under par through his first seven holes at the RBC Heritage at Hilton Head. Stuart Sink is the man to catch in South Carolina. He opened with a 63 today, 8 under par 63, and he is 2 clear of Matt Wallace.
Troy Merritt. Again, finished on 3 under
Troy
par.
Merritt. Finishing way down the field. Sorry,
no, it's not. Three under par. Banging contention. Today, so banging contention. So don't you worry.
The golf weekly bounce, not necessarily what you hope it would be.
Well, you got that. Elsewhere, if you were on our watch along, he literally told us he was going to play well. So this is what you get, Richie.
Did you not come to our watch along?
Until he went to the water.
No. You have time for one quick story, Richie.
A Downing Street spokesperson insists British Prime Minister Boris Johnson did not intervene in Newcastle takeover talks. The proposed sale to a consortium led by the Saudi Public Investment Fund fell through in June of last year. It's claimed that a month before the deal collapsed, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman requested Johnson's intervention as Anglo-Saudi relations, he said, were at stake. A spokesperson for the Prime Minister insisted this evening that Johnson did not intervene, but he did ask Lord Eddie Lister to keep him updated on events.
We'll talk about that with Miguel Delaney later. Just to let you know as well, the Minister for Sport, Jack Chambers, is going to be on OTB AM tomorrow morning. Adrian Barry is going to be talking to him. They'll have Ron Nogara on as well, reacting to La Rochelle's draw against Leinster in the Champions Cup. So that's all on the way from 7:30 tomorrow morning. Joe, good stuff as always.
All right, gents.
Richie, we shall talk to you soon.
Mind yourselves.
Up next, it's John Giles.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.